Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, Monocle 24's weekly dedicated design show. I'm Henry Rees-Sheridan. On today's show, voices from London Craft Week, which wrapped up on Sunday. First up,
there's no such thing as bad decor. It's about an edit. It's a personal edit. And I think it's about how do you take all these things together, mix them, and somehow create a language for a moment.
British designer Jonathan Anderson tells us about Loewe's homeware line. Next,
that sense of where did something come from, how was it made, who are the human beings behind it, is just as important as the prestige of the label and everything else.
We quiz Guy Salter, the chairman of London Craft Week, about the event, and check out an organisation trying to raise the status of craftsmanship worldwide. Plus a report from Singapore Art Book Fair. All that coming up right here on Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. Now, Britain's Jonathan Anderson may be best known for his work as a fashion designer. But since becoming creative director of the luxury Spanish label Loewe, craft has been creeping into the brand's conversation more and more. In 2016, the Loewe Foundation launched a craft prize. And the brand is also continuing to grow its craft-centric homeware line. Jonathan spoke to our design editor Nolan Giles at an event displaying a selection of items from the collection at London's iconic department store, Liberty.
Craft, for me, is used in a way, for me, is something which is a personal endeavour, but at the same time, it's something that's very incredibly inspiring. Obviously, working for a leather goods brand like Loewe, I think the fundamentals of what Loewe is about is craft. It is about making something by hand. And I think there is an overlap. One is obviously in fashion language and the other is not. So I think there's something to do with this idea of the idea of making with your hands, I think, is where they cross over.
You talked a little bit about the time right now being the time of craft and people thinking a little bit more about the home and the objects they have in the home. Can you maybe expand on that a little bit?
Where we are at the moment is that we are living in such an informational overload in terms of the internet, which is an amazing thing, social media, which is an amazing thing, news, which is an amazing thing. But sometimes I feel that we need to kind of reconnect with each other or reconnect with people other than virtual people. And I think, you know, the home has become important because I think it is an amazing way to kind of let your guard down. And it is a very good way of being able to show who you really are.
And when you're thinking about the home and you're thinking about a collection of objects, you know, you were saying there's an element of serendipity when you walk into someone's home in terms of what you experience. When you're putting something like this together and you're working with Loewe as a brand, what's the process that you go through? How did you go through this process?
Well, you know, usually it's a very eclectic process, quite similar to building up a fashion show. You have to take multiple pieces of information and somehow make them kind of have a harmony, which is just like the home. You have, you know, every home is perfect for everyone, for each individual, because it's about taste. There's no such thing as bad decor. It's about an edit. It's a personal edit. And I think it's about how do you take all these things together, mix them, and somehow create a language for a moment, you know? And that's what I find incredibly exciting, is that, you know, that idea of chance encounters.
And was there a language that came out of this, and how did it reflect yourself, and how did it reflect Loewe?
The year before, we had worked with Leather Marketer, which was incredibly colourful and incredibly up. And I wanted something which was, in a weird way, quite this idea of reducing, like a reduction, something which was looking at kind of things where you take it to the minimal line, but how do you give something which is minimal a crafted edge without it being cold?
And can you just take us through perhaps one of the objects where you feel like you've really achieved that?
One of the objects I think we really achieved it is the kind of the chairs, or for example the coffee table, which is done with cane work and folded metal. The coffee table is just squares of leather which stack on top of each other, which is kind of in homage to Felix Gonzalez Torres, this idea of, you know, like taking something away, or you're using a solid material in its rawest form.
And just sort of stepping away from where we are here today and thinking about London Craft Week more broadly, to you, what does it symbolize? Because, you know, you've got your high-end brands here. You've also got, you know, smaller makers and things like that. Do you think of London particularly as a city that has a strong association with craft, and what is the association that this event that you're taking part in has with the city?
I think Britain as a whole has an historical relationship to craft. I think in some ways craft has had a very shady period. When people think of craft, they think of, I don't know what they think of. But, you know, I think it's something which is very inherited in British culture. This idea of making, the idea of like knitting or weaving or ceramics or wood turning. There's something that has been here for hundreds and hundreds of years that I think we really appreciate, which is a bit wrong sometimes. And I think that's what's great about Great Britain.
Is there potential, though, for a city like London to really nurture industries around craft, or is it always going to remain something that's on the fringes and something that, you know, doesn't have a mass appeal?
But I think it's good that it doesn't have a mass appeal. I don't think it's about that. I think it's about you have to stumble across it. And then when it picks up followers, it keeps them. You know, it's a slow burn.
Designer Jonathan Anderson there, talking to Monocle's design editor Nolan Giles about Loewe's This Is Home collection, on display at Liberty Department Store during London Craft Week. Now, as an event, London Craft Week is only 3 years old, but it's already managed to grow into a truly international event. It brings the best of international craftsmanship to London, and importantly, showcases the best British craft to the world. Guy Salter is the impresario behind the event, its founder and chairman. I met him at Doppia Firma, an event in London's Hospital Club put on by the Michelangelo Foundation. More on the event and the foundation in a minute, but first, here's Guy.
Basically, we started with 70 events. We were 120 last year, so this year we're 237. So obviously, you know, big jump in terms of scale. But really the rationale behind it was, number one, to fill a gap, because obviously we've had the London Design Festival in London for years. You know, the fashion weeks happen all around the world. But, you know, you can't have fashion, you can't have design without making. So in that sense, it seemed overdue, and we are the first of its kind. But it's actually the second way that is more interesting, which is we're setting out to create what I call a beyond luxury showcase, which in essence is a sort of city-wide pop-up where we're trying to prove that actually consumers around the world are pretty fed up with seeing the same brands and the same sort of shopping environments and are looking for something more. But the challenge is, how do they access that stuff? How can they be sure about the quality? And so in essence, what we're doing is mixing up sort of the likes of Chanel or, you know, Harrods or Selfridges or Rolls-Royce with relatively little known but superb craftsmen, artists, studios, etc. So we put it out all there. We use London as our platform, and then the visitors can choose what interests them most.
So you seem to be using luxury in the phrase beyond luxury to refer to perhaps a particular consumer experience or a particular set of expectations which consumers might bring to a retail experience. How do you hope to demonstrate a way of going beyond that through the events at London Craft Week?
Yeah, well, that's a spot-on question. And of course, it's difficult because you're using the word luxury and we're using the words craft, and everyone gets a bit funny about this kind of thing. But I tend to take what I call the Japanese approach, which is where we have blurred boundaries between culture, art, design, fashion, luxury, experience, etc. So in essence, what this for me is all about is giving the choice and the diversity. As long as everything has quality in terms of the making and the creativity, because it's not enough that something is made by hand or, you know, well made. It's got to have inspiration and freshness as well. So our view is, if we put that all out there, that's one thing. And then the second thing, we wrap it around with enough experience. And that's where sort of food, drink, performance and so on come in, because the last thing you want it to be is dry and a bit worthy.
Another thing that I really like about the whole agenda behind the event is that you're quite open about wanting to have an international reach, but also to represent not only the UK, which is so frequently just a way of saying London, but also regions outside of the UK. So you're kind of looking both inwards to different regions of the UK and outwards to the rest of the world. Why do you think that approach is important?
Well, it's absolutely critical. Okay, so you're talking to someone who's a Londoner born and bred, right? And the only reason I stayed here all these years is because London did evolve into this incredible commercial and cultural hub. And in that sense, I'm afraid of one of these people who is absolutely gutted by the Brexit vote. And so I feel that LCW has to do its bit to prove that London is still that open and diverse place. And that means we have to work as hard to get the international creators as we do the regional and the devolved nations.
I suppose one thing that I'm particularly interested in is that attempt to bring in work from the regions, because I attend a lot of international architecture events, international design events, which are held in normally quite kind of sexy, cool cities, but effectively could be held anywhere in the world insofar as, I mean, they're almost so aggressively international.
Right.
That they may as well be anywhere.
Yes.
Do you hope to kind of combine a cosmopolitan worldview with a sense of rootedness in a particular country, in a particular place here?
Wow, very good questions. That's exactly what we're trying to do. And in essence, that's what I mean by beyond luxury. In other words, I think that increasingly that's what consumers are looking for. They can't always articulate it quite as well as you did just then. But nonetheless, that sense of where did something come from, how was it made, who are the human beings behind it, is just as important as the prestige of the label and everything else. By the way, the label is still important nonetheless, right? So I think that is the point. So, for example, we've got a lot of Scottish content this year. It was actually very hard, almost harder for me to get the Scottish content than the Korean content. But I knew that that was essential. Now, in terms of how that then relates to London Craft Week itself and the context, that's interesting because at the end of the day, we are still in London. London brings its own warp and weft and its quirkiness. And London is still in the UK. So in that sense, London Craft Week will always reflect that sense of general rootedness. But I think what's going to be interesting in the coming years is to see the extent to which we might do satellite activities in other cities around the world. And when we do that, most likely we'll begin to reflect a little bit more a sense of place in those cities.
You've also made a point of pointing out that the fair has got to a stage where it's not reliant on public funding. Mm. Although I do gather from what you were saying over there earlier that you do interact with bodies like the British Council, which of course are government bodies. Mm. What does that freedom from public funding give you the freedom to do specifically?
You know, the fact that we're independent is very important because, you know, a lot of this gets bogged down in sort of sector politics and stuff. But also, obviously, government money comes with strings attached. That's what everyone will tell you. And I've seen that many times over my career. So actually, money is a constant worry for me because we have to survive and we are not for profit. And we give a quarter of our places away for free to independent makers, because at the end of the day, that is what we're all about, right? But although in one way, it would be a huge relief for me to get a chunk of government money, in another way, I know this keeps me sort of focused and honest, so to speak.
Guy Salter there, founder and chairman of London Craft Week. I was chatting to him at Doppia Firma, an event run by the Michelangelo Foundation for Creativity and Craftsmanship. It's an international organisation set up to promote master craftsmanship and its connection to the world of design. Barbara Geary Truen, the organisation's Secretary General, told me more.
The mission of the foundation is to promote, preserve and perpetuate fine craftsmanship at an international level. And what we are doing here with this exhibit actually incarnates those three prongs of our mission, which are completely interweave. In order to preserve fine craftsmanship, it needs to be promoted, and in order to preserve it, it needs to be perpetuated and brought into the future. The main idea behind how to do that, we are very convinced, is to bring the worlds of craftsmanship and design closer together. The Doppia Firma project does that very beautifully. So here, this exhibit and this project, which is a project by the Fondazione Coloni dei Mestieri e delle Arti, a Milan-based foundation set up in the early 90s to promote and protect fine craftsmanship, by Franco Coloni, who is also one of the co-founders of the Michelangelo Foundation. So the Fondazione Coloni has done this in partnership with Living Magazine. It's a project that brings 15 top designers from across Europe and matches them together with 15 master artisans from Italy, from all throughout Italy. We've put them together and asked them to create a new object, pushing both the boundaries of design and of the materials to create something brand new and iconic and beautiful, which they are. Importantly, this exhibit is called Doppia Firma, which means in Italian double signature, because these objects are co-signed by the designer and the artisan. That's relatively rare. Most times it's the designer who gets the credit. Here we have the designer and the artisan on the same level. And the objects here are prototypes. If the designer and the artisan would like to make them and sell them, they co-own the intellectual property rights for these objects. So this exhibit just puts the artisans, master artisans, at exactly the same level. And hopefully by doing this, we're really changing the image that people have of craftsmen.
Because at the moment, you think they're underappreciated.
Well, I don't know that it's an underappreciation or a lack of knowledge. Our world has changed a lot. But I think that they have always been. I read a biography of Michelangelo when he was working. And even then, I think artisans were, you know, it was the artists, this whole debate between artist and artisan, which if you know a little bit about the objects here and the stories behind them, you'll see these lines are, we are completely blurring these lines and these distinctions. These distinctions, they don't serve us anymore. And I think it's just a question of for whatever reason, working with one's hands, and I guess that might have to do with our educational system and the way, at least here in the West, the way we really value the sciences from the Renaissance on and everything that's intellectual and of the mind, which design is seen to be. In an unspoken way, we placed much more value on that than we have on working with our hands. Importantly, though, and the Fondation Bettencourt in France, 17 or 18 years ago, started a prize for what they call the intelligence of the hand. And they were really pioneers in this respect, I think. They really put their finger right on it. And we.
So, sorry, is that a French foundation which...
The Fondation Lilian Bettencourt is a French foundation whose remit is much, much wider. It's much wider than craftsmanship. But they do support craftsmanship. And I mentioned them, I mentioned the Fondazione Colonia on purpose because the Michelangelo Foundation, one of the important things, an important tenet for us, is that we want to work collaboratively. We are working across countries, across crafts, and we are working together with people. We are interested in finding synergies and working together. So the hand has its own intelligence, and we need to rediscover that. We need to value that. We need to recognize it and celebrate it. And so I think all of the designers here in this project already do that, and many of them even work with their hands. In my view, they are really pioneers, and that's the way forward. In the future, I think a lot of people will be doing that. Our design schools are filled with great, talented people. Everybody wants to go to design school and design things. But what it takes to become a craftsman, people are less interested. And one of the reasons is probably because this image, which I think this image has been kind of there forever, this image of being lesser somehow. And it's simply not true.
And my final question is, what did you think the relationship between design and craftsmanship should be?
That's an easy one. I think it should be like two people in love holding hands. Sometimes they fight, but ultimately they bring out the best in each other.
Barbara Geary-Truin there, speaking to me from the event Doppia Firma at the Hospital Club during London Craft Week. Now in its fourth year running, the Singapore Art Book Fair has become a petri dish for the nation's small art and design scene. Its organisers, the team behind cult favourite independent bookshop Books Actually, are noticing a flurry of bold young faces sprouting up among their regular exhibitors, self-funding and publishing their own printed creations. It signals the birth of a new generation of makers and designers that could give the region's industry a sorely needed shot in the arm. Monocle's researcher Ziana Zulkifli brings us this report from the fair.
The very first year that we organised it, when we announced that we were going to organise a Singapore Art Book Fair, there were people who were a little bit confused. They were like, what is a Singapore Art Book Fair? Because they know art, they know books, but they weren't really sure of art books. We feel like the culture is not as strong. You have people like Kinokuniya and Basha Graphic Books who are doing an amazing job with representing art books, but really more coffee table, something a bit more bulky, a bit more substantial to put in your house and things like that. And that's the concept of art books that Singaporeans understand.
That was Festival Director Renee Ting on starting a cultural phenomenon from scratch. She heads the team that's built the Book Fair as a platform for independent zine makers and magazine publishers showcasing works struggling to get their foot into the island state's bookshops.
How has the indie publishing scene changed over the last few years in general?
I think when we first started the very first edition of SABF, we had a lot of design creatives. We had a lot of people from the same industry, the creative industry, coming up to do their own thing, represented at the very first fair. And just from last year alone, there was like three editions into it. We saw a lot more students, a lot more design students, a lot more really young and independent publishers and craftsmen and things like that.
22-year-old communications undergraduate Racy Lim is a great example of this new generation of creatives. She's editor-in-chief at recently released Singaporean biannual magazine called Sand, which hopes to become a snappy guidebook for amateurs to the creative landscape. Its probing Q&As covers good branding to practical business strategies with artists across music, fashion, visual arts, and more.
I started this magazine because as a young creative myself, I didn't really know where to begin, especially, you know, coming out of polytechnic and everything. So gradually I realized that there's so much that's not talked about. There's so many questions left unanswered. So I just wanted a publication that would answer not just a young creative's questions, but also kind of refresh people who are experienced in the scene as well.
What was the biggest challenge for you building a magazine so young in Singapore?
The biggest challenge we had was dealing with the very small independent magazine scene here in Singapore. But I think after I started, I realised that it's actually not a bad thing. I mean, you have people in London fighting with hundreds of other new creators and publications every week. And here in Singapore, even though it's slow and gradual, there's more likelihood that people get to know your stuff. And the second challenge would be to break the perception that, I think because a lot, when you say independent magazines in Singapore, people assume that it's free because, mainly because a lot of the independent magazines here are free subscriptions. There was a lot of talk needed, there was a lot of discussion needed with the readers that, oh, there are different kinds of independent magazines, not just the free-for-all ones. And I think that was a challenge we had to break through. But I think from, you know, all these events and public discussions, things have been recovering quite well. So yeah, I'm pretty excited for what's to come in the future. It's an open gathering for fellow publishers and artists as well, because in a way we get to learn about each other's work in such a small space within in 4 days. It's kind of like a crash course, you know, for all of us local and national publishers. Yeah.
Long Dang, co-owner and founder of newly opened art bookstore In Pages in Ho Chi Minh, is signing up for this crash course. He tells us that independent publishing in Vietnam still struggles with strict government censorship despite the internet age. The wily, largely underground scene is steadily growing nevertheless, always finding new and creative ways to circumvent the national rulebook.
Like last year I go and I only bring the Sangam art book and a few books from my friends, which is quite sad to be, you know, like we have a table but like the whole country have like 5 books, independent published art book. So this year we have around 30, so which is good. It's a good sign that we start to make more books. I talk with everyone and I started getting books from all the way from Hanoi and the whole region. They send books to my bookstore and I bring them here. So I just think that Saigon is so close to Singapore and all the people need to know that we start to catching up and this is what we got. And the Vietnamese artists back home, they have more motivation to do it next year. So hopefully next year I can encourage more people to come and they have their own table maybe.
So how does this scene differ from a similar book fair in Vietnam? Do you have book fairs like this in Vietnam?
No, we don't. We don't have book fair and we don't have art book fair, even more specific in art. We have book fair, but like government organized. It's with a lot of publishers inside the country, but their book is not very diverse. It's about mostly about like what the community want, which is usually a love story, you know, and then a very cheesy thing. Even if you have like photography book, it's about iconic building of Saigon, which is something like very touristic to see. So I wouldn't say we have the art book fair or any book fair yet.
Long hopes to build Vietnam's very own art book fair someday, but his story on the lack of infrastructure supporting this section of the art and design scene echoes down south in Indonesia. Primo Rizki and Gupta Fatoris from Jakarta-based publishing house Studio Geometry sees progress since the nation's creative boom in the early 2000s, following the 1998 revolution that toppled its former dictatorship. But has it been enough?
What are you guys doing here at the Singapore Arts Book Fair all the way from Jakarta?
We also have this initiative called GeoSpace. So basically, GeoSpace is a pop-up exhibition and pop-up store where we curate all the young artists and promising artists from all over Indonesia. And the objective of GeoSpace is actually to promote the growing creative scene in Indonesia. So yeah, that's why we're here to promote the Indonesian art scene, actually. In Indonesia, there is not much art book fair, but we have the regular book fair, but most of the participants are the mainstream publishers. I see that in some parts of the country, like in Jakarta, Bandung, or Surabaya, the big cities, there are some of indie publishers that are coming with innovative zines, art books, and like indie magazines. But I think it's still not much compared to the one we have here in Singapore.
I think the government currently has been very, very supportive to the creative sector. But then again, what the main challenge is to create a very conducive environment on the market side. Is there any market for independent publishing or not? So I think that's the biggest challenge in the creative sector, in independent publishing as well.
What do you hope for the Southeast Asian scene or the Asian scene in the next 5 to 10 years?
I'm hoping to see more magazines, more art books, photo books coming from the region. And I'm also thinking about having this kind of platform to gather all the independent publishers from Southeast Asia, so we can have like a forum discussion or to share knowledge and share the best practice among all the publishers in Southeast Asia.
There's a consensus among these industry pioneers that the future bodes well for regional partnerships collaborating to boost their respective ground-up national design scenes. For Monocle in Singapore, I'm Zayana Zulkifli.
Monocle's Zayana Zulkifli there, reporting from Singapore Art Book Fair, which ran from the 27th to the 30th of April. That's all for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Alex Funnell, and the man behind the glass, Antonio Fernandes. If you have any comments or queries, then feel free to write to me at hrs@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next week at the same time. You've been listening to Section D. I'm Henry Rees-Sheridan. And until next time, it's goodbye from me.